Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. This week, Dane is joined by Julia Markish, founder and chief humanist at Embrace the Human. Julia's mission is to build organizations that enable their people to live more fulfilled, integrated lives. In today's episode, you'll discover, first, cultural influence on career paths. Julia shares her journey from consulting at Bain & Company to embrace a career focused on organizational culture. She reflects on how the strong culture at Bain, despite her mismatch with the consulting work itself, ignited her passion for creating vibrant, supportive workplace environments. Second, the humanization of work. Explore Julia's insights on the rehumanization of workspaces. She advocates for workplaces where people are seen as humans first. Finally, they'll discuss teal organizations, a model characterized by self-management, wholeness, and evolutionary purpose. She explores how adopting teal principles can transform organizations. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group, and today I'm joined by Julia Markish up in San Francisco. Julia is the founder and chief humanist at Embrace the Human, and she's done some really cool work in this industry. So we're going to talk a lot about what's exciting her about teams today. Welcome, Julia.
Thanks, Dane.
So for the benefit of our listeners and for me, because I only just recently met you, tell us a little bit more about you. How did you come to be doing all this cool work?
Where to start? I guess I started my career in consulting and at Bain & Company. And one of the things that I very quickly realized is that I loved working at Bain and I really wasn't a fan of the work. And that confused and piqued my curiosity. And what I realized only after a while, but what I realized was that it was the culture that got me. People love being a Bainie. And we had these sayings, once a Bainie, always a Bainie never lets another Bainie fail. And I think that it was that zeitgeist that kept me there for 6 years, despite the fact that I was certain to my core that the work itself was not for me. And the work itself was very much like slide heavy and analysis heavy. Anyway, the point is that I got really interested in culture, in team culture. And after a time, I did come to realize that the thing that made me light up is when other people lit up. And so that's the path that I followed and was always looking out for culture markers and seeing when people, like I worked at Disney Studios for a while, just for like 2 months in between my business school years. And I was fascinated by the people that were like true Disney files that came to work just beaming at the fact that they could work for the mouse. And I was not one of those people, but being surrounded by them was just fascinating. So that's kind of what got me into the work that I do today, this fascination and real like love for connection that people can have to either the other people that they're with or the purpose of an organization, much more so than the work itself.
That's neat. And you know, we don't hear too many people come and talk about, I love the company, but not the work. But I bet you it's not that uncommon if people actually stop and think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we glorify roles and positions, but ultimately most knowledge workers are sitting answering emails all day. And it's like, is that really what you love doing? I don't know.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that will talk to, I know Dan Pink talks to this, in our teams, in our organizations, given the amount of time we spend, why aren't we friends with more of the people we work with? I think part of the answer there is that we are overdoing work as a society. You mentioned that all of the emails and tools, like we've made work so far from human over time. And when you said slide heavy and heavily analytical, you know, there are some people who love that work. That fills their cup, that brings them purpose and joy, but there's a lot of people who don't.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head for me, this humanization or rehumanization maybe of work. I'm not sure. Maybe we were never there, and maybe it's just a vision that I have of some non-existent past where people actually thought of each other as humans first and coworkers second. But whether or not it was a reality, I believe that it is a better reality. And it's something that we actually currently have the opportunity to do, to be, to grasp, because there's so much automation in the world. AI can probably do half of the things that you're doing, which doesn't mean that you should be paid half. It means that you should be being more and more of yourself and more human. And like, you are the only one that can add that human component to whatever you're doing. And also ultimately it strikes me that we've forgotten, and again, maybe this is me romanticizing some past that didn't exist, but we've forgotten that industry, that companies, organizations are all not just formed by humans, but formed for humans, right? It's not like the end is not the bottom line. The end is the lives that you impact. And without lives to impact, said industry or company should not exist and doesn't. But ultimately, it's like, we're here for people. So let's remember that and celebrate it.
I think so. And I really like that. And that actually leads me onto the question around the chief humanist title. So, you know, it sounds like I share a similar sort of longing for or romanticization of village life, you know, hundreds of years back, where things were more human and people had multiple roles. Maybe I was a basket weaver, but I did also come out and help with harvest, and I did barn raising, and we were more connected. You touched on the word, that love for connection. Tell me a little bit about how that's kind of led you to both the chief humanist title and also embrace the human, like the business that you're out there building and the work that you're doing.
Yeah. There are a few things that make humans humans, right? I guess that I think about it. It's not really that it makes us human, because most other animals on the planet are really good at community building and connection. In fact, they're probably much better at it than we are. So maybe I need to rename my company to Embrace the Animal.
Chief Animal. Chief Animalist. I like that.
Oh my God.
We'll have to do an A-B test and see how it goes.
Exactly. Yeah, that the core of connection being, I don't know, either lost to a lot of us or never thought possible to a lot of us. That's what I'm trying to bring to the world of business, or especially technology. I mean, living in San Francisco and working in a lot of tech companies, it's been both one of the things that I've appreciated seeing and one of the things that I've experienced a real dearth of as well. So when it's there, it's beautiful, it's motivating, it creates more effective teams, right? Like when you have connection, when you have trust, when you have bonds between people that extend beyond, are you going to do this thing that I know I need from you? Then really beautiful things happen. And on both sides, right? Like on the business side, as I said, more effective teams, you're like operating better, but then also just on the day-to-day happiness of each of the members of that team. And so that ended up being where I wanted to focus my time and where I really wanted to see both of these positive effects flourish.
And I mean, flourish is one of my favorite words right now when it's coming to teams and people at work. So I'm going to play out on that a little bit. Okay. And you also used the word happiness. So one of our former guests, Gary Ridge, who's a fellow Australian like myself, he was the CEO of WD-40. And you think, you know, lubricant in a can, like how exciting is that? The way he built his culture and scaled that organization over the time was entirely through, you know, bringing the humans together. And one of his brilliant value statements or behaviors was people go home happy every day. So it's not only that they do that connection and great work at home, but then they take it back into their communities and everyone's flourishing, you know, partners at home, kids, parents, sisters, friends, you name it.
I love that so much. And I want to meet this person. I will absolutely listen to that episode. Yeah, I think the reality is that much of the work, I think as we were just saying, much of the work that we do might not actually be all that fulfilling, interesting on a day-to-day basis. And so, like, again, as we come back to the fact that organizations are made of humans, are made of feeling, thinking, creative beings, we really need to tap into that aspect of us. Otherwise, we're losing so much potential.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it actually makes me think, if you're tapping into that aspect of us, who we are, but also them, like who are the customers that we're serving, then it has to create not only a better organization for how we run internally, but it has to create more innovation, more followership on whatever that product or brand or service is. It has to just kind of multiply.
Yeah. And also, one of the things that I love about, like, this age of transparency, there's loads to not love. But one of the things that is, I think, positive is that we as consumers and customers do get to, if we're interested, see into the inner workings of the companies that we buy from, the companies that we deal with. And to the extent that there is alignment and a through line for what we see in terms of marketing or what we think we're getting and those internal workings, right? Like the culture of the organization, the leadership and what they care about and how they talk. How many internal memos have been surfaced throughout, I don't know, the last decade where it's like, wow, I'm not aligned with this person, and like that impacts how I do business with their company. It's very, I don't know, it's very cool for me. Like, there's no more hiding.
No. And in fact, I was just talking to a customer in Europe today, and they were saying, we're getting with marketing, and this is a large, you know, multi-billion-dollar organization. We're getting with our marketing team because we want what we're talking about internally with leadership and culture and values and behaviors to be the same as what we're talking to our customers about. So it all makes sense. You know, we can't afford for the marketing to come up with something great that we're not living every day within the team. And,
and
that hasn't happened before. I mean, some companies have been leaders in that space, but often HR and marketing are off doing their own things.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the leaders, I think, in that was Netflix, right? When they open sourced all of their employee handbooks and like how we work. And it was so refreshing and shocking. And also it made me want to do business with Netflix.
Yeah. There's also something in that. I've had a few guests on the show that talk about this philosophy of sharing, and that's why they like to come on podcasts. That's why they like to put some of their IP out in the world for free. And when you've got a big platform, whether you're a Netflix or any other big brand, you could be a large oil and gas company, a large pharmaceutical brand, it doesn't matter. You could be a small brand and still share. But you've got this vehicle through which other people may pay attention and may learn and may aspire to be like some of the things that you do?
Yeah, it makes me think of the abundance mindset that is a hallmark of teal organizations.
Yes.
Which we knew that we would get to at some point.
But, yeah, thank you. Let's dive in.
Yeah. So one of the ways that you know that an organization is teal, and we'll get to a definition of that in just a second, but one of the ways that you get like the sense that an organization is a little bit teal or a lot of it teal is that they share. And it's not just like, oh, here's the thing that we do internally. It's actually like, here's our strategy. And if there are other companies out there, if there are other organizations out there that want to join us in executing against our purpose, why not give you access to the way that we're doing it such that we can work towards that purpose in parallel together? And if we do, then we will achieve that purpose faster and better. And like, maybe you'll share some of your ideas and methodologies with us.
Which
is, of course, like so different from what we're used to, certainly in the States, with like IP law and litigation coming out of our ears.
Everywhere. I think the US does about 95% of the world's litigation.
Yes, I think that.
But professionals at it here.
Resonates.
But it's I like that sharing, and it ties into that theme of ecosystem that you mentioned earlier as well. So when you think about it, we are living in a world where technology is actually giving us more connection and at the same time less. Mm-hmm. We're able to find more information. You and I are able to have a conversation today like this, and yet we're not spending as much time, you know, with our teams, with our community members. So there's this really interesting kind of duality of what's happening.
Yeah. Which of course brings us back to like, we need to step up our humanity to fill that void. We really need to lean into the active connection of like understanding the other person and where they're coming from and what their context is, because we can't pick up on that just automatically from being in the same room with them anymore. So it needs to be, an active attempt versus just something that happens.
And that ties heavily into mindset. Actually, that's what, if you play that out, we're shifting with this abundance mindset from competition to creation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big opportunity for teams right now. No matter what industry you're in, no matter what department, you can do it in finance, you can do it in IT, you can do it in sales, but starting to go out there and create and connect with outside influences, I think it's energizing. And maybe that's a way of, you know, people who are in great companies where they love the culture, it lets them actually get back to loving the work that they do too.
True. Yeah. And it makes me think also of a movement in the technology world that at first was so radical and now is so accepted, which is open source.
Yeah.
Right? It's like we can just build on what others have done rather than reinvent the wheel 1,000 different ways.
Yes. That's actually a really thought-provoking statement, weirdly. I think technology has done it well. I don't think many other industries have.
The pharmaceutical industry?
Yeah. No, definitely not. Oil and gas, probably not as much either. There's been a little bit more sharing in the risk, but not as much in the technology and the exploration.
Yeah. We're just energy in general, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many proprietary ideas are there around like how to, I don't know, capture solar energy or wind energy or like whatever it is. And it's such a dire situation that you'd think that there would be an explosion of open source. And I am not an expert in the area. So I perhaps there are, you know, pockets of sharing. I'd like to hope, but nothing that has come up in the news, at least.
No. But even in the micro setting, so macro setting, open source and sharing is great. But in the micro setting, even within a business, I'm seeing more and more teams right now wanting to understand more about how their work impacts a team member in a different department or, you know, in a different part of the supply chain. Mm-hmm. And we haven't done a great job of sharing that in a lot of organizations. It's kind of like, here's your KPIs for the manufacturing team. And unless you're a public company that reports out on overall results, there isn't a lot of awareness around, well, how does my effort in this manufacturing cycle allow the sales team or the delivery team to do their best work too?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is another example of that, that active leaning in versus the default status quo. It's especially for larger organizations, it's so much easier. There's so much less effort that would go into putting an individual in a group, in a division, and having them perform their duties. So much less effort, but also so much less potential. And so there are organizations out there that then go the extra step of putting mentors and mentees together from different departments, mm-hmm. or having like ride along days where a person is doing 0% of their job and just getting to follow someone that they are paired with in a completely different function to understand how that function works. But it's an investment, and it's, you know, it's a pretty sizable one at that.
Big time.
I know that those companies are getting returns on those investments in a big way in terms of innovation, creativity, effectiveness, all of that, productivity.
I like the way that you frame that as leaning in. And the ride-along day really captures my attention. I hadn't heard of that before. I'd heard of people maybe doing some shadowing while they're handing off jobs, but just a ride-along in the ordinary course of business is... it's powerful. Yeah, there's a dollar commitment to it or a productivity loss temporarily, but it doesn't, you don't have to move the earth to make it happen, do you?
Right. Well, yes and no, because it requires an owner, it requires a champion, it requires somebody on the leadership team being a vocal supporter thereof. And of course, like project management, et cetera. So it can be both easy and intricate.
You can make it more hard. So what would be an example of where you've supported a customer to build ride-alongs as a program rather than just sort of a one-off, let's try this?
You know, the ride-along program is not something that I worked on personally, but if I were I think that there would need to be this strong support from leadership. And it always is, right? Leaders are defined by the people to whom people look, other people look to understand what the norms are and what the culture is of an organization. And if there are leaders who are supporting a program like a ride-along program, that means that they value in all of their employees this cross-functional understanding and the effort it takes to do that. And without that, I think it's fun, maybe. I can imagine people who are really tired of their jobs wanting to ride along with maybe somebody in a different function, but that's not the kind of reward that the organization should be looking for, right? That's like an individual fun thing that's a one-off.
Yeah.
But if you really systematize something like that and make it part of the culture, that's where you're going to reap the real organizational rewards.
It's interesting. If you were to systematize it and actually ask for some kind of work product out of the ride along, let's just pretend someone asked you and I to go and put this together. You wouldn't need to create a deep amount of work. It's not like, hey, write me a 3-page report, but you could probably create something lightweight, which is, tell me 3 things that surprised you. Tell me 3 things that would excite you if you were in the role. And tell me 3 things that aren't happening that you think would be great to add. Like it's just very light. But that would be very informative, particularly if you took multiple data points across multiple departments.
Yeah. I think also one way to really get juice out of this squeeze would be to make the cross-functional switches between departments that are either up or downstream from one another, right? So like comms and marketing, or you know, like product and engineering is such an easy one to think through, but like every department, customer success and finance. Ooh, how about that one?
Yeah. Because that's got some tension there too.
Right, right. But as you get the contextual knowledge, you can start imagining like, how should I be doing my job differently? Or how should we as an organization, as the customer success organization, let's say,
yeah,
start doing things differently, and not in a huge way, but like, what are three things to your point that we might tweak on our end to make the lives of these lovely people easier?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also, I can guarantee you that the folks in finance have told these three things to the folks in customer success about 1,000 times already, right?
Never like, landed. Yeah.
Please, 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 can you? And right, exactly. It's like number 27 on our list of three priorities. We'll get to it eventually. But to live it is to understand it. And to understand it is finally to actually get aligned with it. But like, awareness and understanding are very, very different things.
Live it to understand it is a great soundbite for everyone who's struggling out there with change management. That's definitely one of the hacks, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I like that a lot. And the vertical sort of upstream downstream concept, there's a gentleman called Dominic Price who works with Atlassian. He's their like work futurist. And I listened to him on a podcast the other day, and he explained that when you're looking at team health, you don't want to be insular and only look at your team. You want to look at the two teams that pass work to you and the two teams that you pass work to. Mm-hmm. And you want to go and look at the health of those teams and their relationships. So your ride-along model might actually be a very informative and reinforcing, you know, activity if people are being intentional about looking at those kind of workflows in their business.
Yeah. Well, cool. I hadn't heard of Dominic, but I'll definitely.
He's awesome. Up. He's very awesome. Good. And he was dressed as Mario when I met him at the Atlassian Team 24 conference, which, as someone who likes to dress up, I thought that was very cool.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. It also takes me back. There was one other question I had, and I want to dive more into this Teal organization. Mm-hmm. So when we were talking before the show, you mentioned that in the Teal organizations, as you move up into green and into Teal itself, it's more collaborative. It's more evolutionary as a team dynamic. Mm-hmm. That to me, number one, it sounds exciting. I mean, who doesn't want to work for an organization that's collaborative and evolutionary? But to me, it means that you have to be doing a lot more human connection, because individuals in their roles aren't going to be able to find what that next thing is. I think it takes a team. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about what attracted you to the Teal organizations, how you've seen them creating other ways to build that collaborative inclusion.
Mm-hmm. So Teal, I think maybe it makes sense to define a little bit what the heck we're talking about for those folks that aren't fully familiar. But Teal organizations is a term that was coined by Frederick Laloux in his seminal work, Reinventing Organizations. I think it was published about 15-ish years ago. And the idea is that over time we have developed as a society, and our the maturity of our organizations have also developed. And you know, way back millennia ago, the only way that we might have organized is through fear and power. And over time, yes, we've had armies, we've had religions, organized religions, but then we've also come up with organizations that are meritocratic, which is a very, very different kind of feeling than command and control. And out of meritocratic, we've even developed democratic, which works certainly in like co-ops, for example, some co-ops. And then so that the next evolution of that organizational path is Teal, which is likened to an ecosystem where every individual is certainly part of the whole, but also is very much empowered, self-empowered to lead when it's called for, and to add to the whole as it seems fit. And so the Teal organization is marked by three distinct pillars. One is self-organization, which is more or less what I just described, right? Like groups of people or individuals take the lead on something and just like make it happen. So there's self-organization, there's an evolving purpose, which we can get back to, but essentially it's like we do what is serving our organization the best at a given time. And if that needs to evolve, we're not rigid about it. And then finally, wholeness or holism, which is actually multifaceted. There's the wholeness of a human, right? Like the people that work and exist in this organization are whole humans, and they have multiple facets to themselves. But also, it reminds us that we are part of a greater whole also. So Teal organizations are very much attuned to their environmental impact and their industry as a whole. And like, how do we contribute to the movement in whatever it is we're in. And that's also where a lot of that open sourcing comes from, where it's like, oh, I'm part of many organizations that are trying to do this. And like, how do we move together versus fight each other? Because that's not helping our purpose. Fighting each other is useless for our purpose. It's great for the bottom line, but you know, that's not what
we're here necessarily for. As much as there has been open source, there hasn't necessarily been a lot of wholeness in the kind of big tech arena, or even the startup tech arena, because, you know, people are all trying to get their platform to win and you don't really see it all of the time, do you?
Yeah. I think Firefox might be one of the most advanced in the Teal space for technology. Firefox is entirely open sourced. Mozilla is like the parent company, and they've done the most, I think.
Interesting. That's very interesting. And when you mentioned evolving purpose, sorry, you go.
Oh, I realized that I went off on this tangent to talk through what Teal is, and then I completely lost the thread of the question.
No, that's all good. Where you told me before the show we were going to go down a rabbit hole, and I love rabbit holes. So this whole movement inspires so many questions. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I was going to dive into, you know, when we talk about, you know, what are Teal organizations, you suggested evolving purpose. And what I heard you say was what works now and what works for us. There was kind of a fluidity to that. So could you maybe dive into that a little bit more?
Yeah. Do you mind if I use a bit of a meta example?
Please.
Great. So I was introduced to the book Reinventing Organizations by someone whose article I read. I believe it was in like Forbes or Fortune or something, ironically, because it was about the humanization of business. And I was like, you seem like a very simpatico person and I need to know you. And so we met up. His name's Ed Fraunheim. We met up and he was like, I think you'll really like this book. And we started meeting up every couple of weeks to like have a little book club about reinventing organizations. And over time we collected more people to this book club. And then we ended up with our own little Teal organization. We call ourselves the Teal Team. And we started out by really wanting to understand and embody Teal, just to like experience it as much as we possibly could. And we've been going strong for, I want to say 4 or 5 years, something, four years. But over time we had different members, and different members wanted different things from the group. You know, initially it was really much more about education, and then we had folks that were like, well, why shouldn't we try to expand the movement more? Like that feels like a really good thing for us to be doing. And so we were like, yeah, let's do that. And so we started holding these quarterly, well, we call them bonfires, but like inviting more people from the community and from outside the community to come learn about some aspect of teal. And so we basically do these like webinar-ish sessions on a quarterly basis to spread the word. And then someone else was like, well, what if we like helped the teal movement coalesce a little bit? Because it's so very haphazard at the moment. There are loads of teal organizations, but nobody's really like cataloged them. So a subset of our teal team gets together, is like ongoing this project of creating a teal map of like the teal organizations that are mostly on the holism pillar, teal organizations that are on that pillar, and like which organizations out there support them, like what VCs are really focused on teal. There's this mass of organizations out there. And so our purpose then evolved to also consolidate, you know, all of the information out there. And like, that's not at all how we started, right? We were a book club. But then things changed. It just evolved.
And like you said, it's what we enjoy. It's what works. And what I'm hearing as well is, as you had new members come in, that they brought some of their own influence and belief and desire. So it is talking about being evolutionary and collaborative. It's letting the team lead from any position on the team, which is a theme I really like.
Yes, exactly. And like Ed and I, we love it. We're co-founders and we absolutely love that designation, but that gives us no particular power or influence or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. You know, like any member of the team can decide at any time to raise an idea. And if there's support for it, if there's energy around it, awesome. That's your baby. Go raise your baby.
Yeah.
And if there isn't, then like it kind of naturally fizzles out. And we've had plenty of that as well.
Which is good, because you learn from it, and some people may opt in and opt out, and it's healthy. I think there is a sense that teams have got to be so precise in driving business efficiency and driving towards this mission or this customer value proposition. Mm-hmm. And that might be why great cultures end up having work that their teams don't like doing. Mm-hmm. Because they you can't only be led by your customer, which sounds a bit crazy, but you need your team to be telling you where they want to go as well. Because otherwise you're not going to be able to perform for your customer if you don't have a team to do the work at some stage either. So there's this kind of symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like also, not to get even more meta about it, but if you encourage the connection between your employees and your customers, there's also like your employees might then be more attuned to what customers need and feel a lot more excitement about building in that direction, because they then can connect the dots between like this tedious work and someone's life being made easier by it. So like suddenly I'm actually a lot more excited by the tedious work.
That's right. And I remember Daniel Pink was referencing a study, which I've forgotten the name of, where they put iPads in front of the chefs in the kitchen so they could see the families enjoying the food that they were cooking. So what seems like a tedious effort, making a soup or chopping up carrots, all of a sudden it's like, oh, look at the experiences we're creating for these people.
Yes, exactly. I just got goosebumps. Yeah.
It's cool. It's powerful. You've totally sold me on teal. So I'm definitely going to be diving in and seeing a lot more of this. The other thing I noted down here, which I'd be interested in your sort of views on as the chief humanist, is we had a guest on the show that released this week, and Wagner was talking about you don't build teams, you compose teams. And in composing teams, it's more like music and art, and there's color and there's tone, and you know, it's just a lot more fluid. How does that play out? It sounds to me like that's what you're describing of your own teal team. But do you see there being ways in which, particularly as people leaders, ways in which that fluidity can be created in amidst the structure of, you know, career development frameworks and all of those important things that we build as people leaders?
Yeah, what a beautiful metaphor. And I really resonate with it in that as a manager / leader, which I think those two roles are often embodied by the same person, but they're very different roles. But you kind of need to have both hats on when you are putting together, let's say, a team. And you need to be a leader in that you've got to paint the vision for any person that is considering joining the team. You need to be very explicit about what is our current purpose. What is it that we're like trying to accomplish? And then as a manager, you have to be very thoughtful about what are the complementary skills that are currently required to fulfill this purpose.
Yes.
But then also there are so many, and maybe you get those right with the person that you bring in, but that's like two dimensions of dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands, that person also brings. And like, that's the beauty of it. That's like the cool aspect of it, that you've got this like maybe two-dimensional plane along which you are achieving goals. And then you've got all of this awesome 3 or 4D colorful stuff that's like chemistry.
Yeah.
And if you're not harnessing that, which I suppose is kind of a utilitarian way of thinking about it, but nevertheless, if you're not harnessing that it becomes a flat team.
It does, yeah.
Right? But alternatively, if you are able to harness it, and if you're able to like get your team all gooey in it, then such cool things happen. And it's like more like jazz. And sure, yes, there's this like, there are notes that you have to hit, but all the in between can be so fun and so cool and so unexpected. As a leader, then you are encouraging people to take those leaps and do the crazy things. And as a manager, you're ensuring that you're still hitting your milestones and yada yada. Yeah.
I really like that. I really like the way you framed it as 2D into 4D as well. Because I'm a very visual person, so I can see that straight away. The 2D is the piece of paper with my job description and my metrics on it. And the 4D is like everything that happens above and beyond it in colors. And that's very cool. That's very cool.
And I think what's really challenging these days is for hybrid teams or certainly remote teams, it's just harder to get there. Everything is literally 2D because you're in front of a screen all day.
On the screen.
Yeah. And so it's challenging, but it's a challenge that leaders need to undertake. Because you're just missing so much otherwise. And it's also why I really encourage clients that are hybrid or remote, certainly remote, to bring their teams together, to bring as much of their organizations together on a regular basis as possible. And like, those are not times to sit in a room and look at slides and talk about strategy. Like, that is, you can do that at other times, this is the moment when you get to get into the 4D goo.
Yeah, I like that. I think someone needs to do a 4D goo simulation.
I will
throw the whole team into the big bucket.
Yeah. But it's there's so many cool opportunities. A friend of mine is the founder of a company called Late Night Art, and he and his team, they facilitate art-based team events. I think his tagline is "Disconnection is the disease, creativity is the cure." Wow. And that's, you know, that's what we're talking about here. And essentially, it's a session where people sit at tables that start out as blank canvases, and they are given art supplies and they are given prompts. And at first, people are like, "What is this?" And by the end, people are hugging and crying and like really in their feels. And that's what you want. That's what you need during those in-person connection moments.
I like that. That is a really good hope for the future of teamwork too, because if you've got teams having more of those connections alongside the work that they do, it's going to have impact above and beyond, you know, themselves, their families, the companies, customers.
Exactly.
That totally goes to wholeness.
To the point of, I forget now who you were talking about, that, the WD-40.
Gary.
What an amazing vision. Like, that's the kind of vision. I want to go work for WD-40 now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's it. Well, this has been awesome, Julie. You've hit some great points. I'm totally sold on Teal. I don't think you should become a chief animalist, but you know that was a fun conversation. Animals do create great connection and community, so I think that was the key point there. Really like the whole piece on, you know, businesses, organizations, industry is made for humans by humans, so let's not forget it. It's a great reminder and call to action for any leaders. And as we moved into the Teal discovery around sharing an ecosystem, and that whole kind of little piece that we dived into on the ride along, I thought that was really fun. I'm even going to try that in my teams starting next quarter. You know, letting people live it to understand it. I thought that was a great soundbite. So just so many great pieces, and finishing on the 4D goo, like how can you go past letting people truly experience who they are and what their creative energies are while we're all together at work? Very cool stuff.
Thanks, Dane. You've been an absolute delight. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything less, but I don't know how the hell you connected all of those dots and navigated my very meandering mind.
I loved it. I think I knew when we met in Transform that we were going to have a lot to talk about, and we'll have to keep finding ways to keep playing with some of this stuff too.
I would love that. I would love nothing more.
Great. If any of our customers want to reach out and, you know, find ways to work with you and embrace the human, how do they best find you?
That would be wonderful. I'm at embracethehuman.com. Check it out. There's executive coaching and facilitation, leadership development, and people program consulting, kind of a portfolio approach to all of the ways in which organizations can help their leaders and teams connect, which probably won't be a surprise.
Yeah, I can see it.
So that's our purpose. And or just reach out at julie@embracethehuman.com.
Perfect. Well, thanks for making the time today, Julie. And we'll definitely catch up soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dane.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,